say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
His brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that's never been to The Rock, but...
If you're some man!
Nailed it.
You didn't nail anything. We're talking about Alcatraz, Uncle Sam's Devil's Island, the actual Rock.
Oh, my bad. Here we go.
If you smell what the Rock is cooking.
C-Bot, go to timeout. We have an actual show to do here.
I know you are, but what am I?
I'm... Anyway, as I was saying... We are Hysteria 51, and we are broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago. I am your host, John Goforth, and tethered to me miles away with simply a can and some string is my co-host, the infamous Mr. Brent Hand.
Thanks, John. It sounds like the robot exchange program is going well.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
For me, I can't believe that you agreed to it, but I will say timeout is a new one. I hadn't really tried that before. How'd you pull that off, and how's it working?
Well, it's actually pretty simple. I set up we got a new dishwasher, and I set up the dishwasher box, put it next to an electrical outlet, and then I cut a hole in it and put one of those hamster bottles, filled it full of vodka. And I gotta be honest, you throw them in there with some electricity and vodka, keeps them quiet. And here's the best part, since it's so small, he kind of likes it because it's the only place that he can get away
Let
from.
Let me paint you like a French lady. Lady fingers bottle rockets. Happy 4th of July.
From him.
That tracks. So, then where do you send Kyle when he misbehaves?
I haven't figured that part out. Nothing I do actually seems like a punishment. It's like trying to punish a two-year-old. For instance, I put him in a dark closet for 48 hours, literally 2 days, and he just sang show tunes the entire time.
What's nice to know how you punish your two-year-old.
Who also sang show tunes the entire time. No, it was weird. No.
Bye, Bertie. I'm gonna miss you so.
Well, that's awful on many levels. If you're new to the show, though, and wondering what all this was or is or what's going on, the first robot who is in timeout is Conspiracy Bot, and I built him to help produce a show, but as you can hear, he sucks at it, and the higher-pitched voice is Conspiracy Bot's robot minion. His name is Kyle. He likes the aforementioned cheese muffins and apparently show tunes.
I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair.
All right. South Pacific, enough of the speak and spell. John, tonight we're talking a real-life story that was made into a Hollywood movie, The Escape from Alcatraz. And I will say this real quick, though. You did misspeak because this podcast has been to The Rock, or at least some of us have. Producer Lise and I toured there about 2 years ago. Now, it was post its Eastwooding and Connery caging. But we were there, and so that kind of brings up in my mind a good question for you. What's your favorite movie based on a true story?
Well, first and foremost, I would like to continue to use Nicolas Cage as a verb. I think that was a wonderful addition.
Connery caging? No, just caging on its own.
He just caging on its own, yeah. Actually, I guess in that use, it might have been an adverb. Anyway. Wow, yeah, it's a good question. I'm just happy to be having this conversation. I'm back after missing a few weeks, being I was in an undisclosed location, but I am happy to be back.
I'm always in undisclosed locations. This is how I live my life.
And happy to be asked inane questions by you. So I'm going to go with Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that was probably my favorite movie based on a true story.
Yeah, you throw that in the front of every movie, period, based on a true story. Ratatouille.
in all seriousness, oh man, I have a few. I really liked Pursuit of Happiness, that Will Smith flick. Yeah. It was like kind of one of those tear jerkers.
I was just going to say tear jerker.
But also like a true story that you have a hard time believing was a true story and yet has an awesome ending. Sometimes true stories, because they're true stories, don't have great endings. and that one did. I really liked Lincoln. I thought that was Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln. Well, it's like everything he acts in. Like, how does this man? I don't get it. He just becomes the
like
role.
One day you wake up, you look in the mirror, someone yells "cut," and you're Daniel Day-Lewis, and you have been your whole life. Son of a bitch, that guy's good.
He's really good. I would say this does not have a happy ending, but I really liked the movie The Social Network.
Well, yeah, and you've bought yourself some time for saying that, because they not that they're listening. I promise, and none of them.
I'm gonna be in Facebook jail by the end of the day because Zuck didn't enjoy Jesse Eisenberg's treatment.
Did you see on Facebook someone put one of those captchas or whatever they're called, and it had click all the boxes that contain a lizard, and it just had like a couple lizards, and then Mark Zuckerberg.
I'm gonna throw one other out there. Admittedly, they probably took some liberties, but it is based on a true story. Zack Snyder's 300.
Yeah. A lot of liberties, I'm sure. That guy's hunch was not nearly as pronounced on the Hunchback.
that was the only one, obviously.
Otherwise, it's spot on.
Spot on.
I got one. I'm only going to give you one, and because it's the one you should have rattled off, I'm ashamed of you for not. And you've even went on a little adventure with said person. Fire in the Sky, the Travis Walton story. You
okay.
Think about that.
All right.
One.
All right. All right. That's fair. That's
Travis,
fair.
I apologize for John to you.
So you know what's interesting? I should be apologizing. When I went through the exercise in my head, I wasn't even thinking of like Fortean.
Oh well, I didn't say that they needed to be. I was just giving you shit because you didn't say Travis.
Travis
and the other
thing
is, speaking of the 300, when you talk to Travis, Travis is like, "Yeah, that is not the story. That is not."
Yeah, it's true. He's literally like, "Nope, didn't happen that way. It's a fun
he's
movie,
like,
but nope."
I told them they could make a movie, and man, they made a movie.
The big difference being he doesn't go, "That's not my movie." He's like, no, it was fun making a movie. It has nothing to do with what actually happened, but it was fun making a movie.
And he also said that the aliens look like middle-aged Asian men, and they took them to a La Quinta Inn. So not a spaceship, but, you know, similarities nonetheless.
I feel like that last part you might have made up.
It was a comfort inn, but they're more litigious, so I try to keep it.
Changing the names to protect the innocent.
All right, though. Let's get to prison, which is something that you're probably going to have to get used to one of these days, John. So let's get started.
If this robot stays here much longer, I think you're right.
Why don't you start? Tell us a story, but let's start at the end, and then we're going to tell you how we got there. Let's do it that way.
All right. So the year 2020. No, I'm kidding. All right. Starting at the end, and it's not the end, but it's kind of the end of certainly the end of the movie. If you haven't, so the story we're going to tell you today is The Escape from Alcatraz. And it's about four inmates who planned, three of which who actually escaped Alcatraz. Whether they were successful in making it to land is another question, but they were successful in so much as that they were successful in never being seen or heard from again or captured.
The end.
Yeah. Well, kind of.
Sort of, yeah. It was June 11th, 1962. Again, four inmates planned the escape, three actually made the escape. But before we get into what might or might not have happened to them from that point forward, let's paint the picture of everything that led to this moment.
Yeah, like a French lady, as Kyle so appropriately said earlier. Like
yes, he was
lady.
Just, he was foreshadowing.
Yeah. Give us a brief synopsis, if you will, of said story, Jonathan.
All right. So the Alcatraz.
Oh, Alcatraz. It sounds like something you get for indigestion.
It's true. By the way, there was a gay bar in Carbondale where we both went to college called Club Traz.
Club Traz.
Do you think Traz was short for Alcatraz?
Well, they had I didn't even think about it. They had those jail cells up front. It was the not so good kept secret that all the sorority chicks went up there for drag nights on Sunday. So the gay bar on Sunday nights was full of like dudes from college trying to pick up chicks.
<It's true. laughs> Which I'm sure the gay community was just thrilled with.
Right. Hey, fraternity guy. I don't know, man. Maybe. Who knows?
Well, yeah. And pros and cons. Pros and cons.
Right.
Well, anyway, our college stories aside, the Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary was a maximum security federal prison on Alcatraz Island, 1.25 miles off the coast of San Francisco.
Have you been there? Have you seen it yourself?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have not. I didn't take the ferry over to it.
But you've been to San. It looks like it's just right there. And
I stood on
the
harbor,
island,
you know, had a seal squawking at me and was staring right at it.
I ate at that, like, the pier where that restaurant right there where the seals are.
Yeah.
And yeah. And now if you're on Alcatraz, 1.25 miles looks like it's like 30 feet. It looks like you're right there.
I mean, literally, it's like you look at it quickly and you're like, I could swim that.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Don't. By the way. Don't.
Yeah, don't try.
Just don't.
Well, they do triathlons. You can swim in now. It's kind of like the DB Cooper jumper. They're like, you can't do it. And people are like, well, I own a plane, one of those, and we actually do it for experienced jumpers. But yeah, you die. Don't worry about it. You'd die.
$159. You can do it.
Yeah. Sorry, but I digress.
Yeah. So Alcatraz, the actual prison, opened. The island was already there, of course. It opened in August of 1934. And closed up shop in March of 1963, so it was around for roughly 30 years. It was intended specifically for prisoners who continuously caused trouble at other federal prisons. It was kind of thought of as a last resort prison, if you will, to hold, you know, the worst
no
of the worst.
There's no rehabilitation for these people. We're just sticking them there to die, so to speak.
Yeah, sometimes literally, sometimes figuratively, mm-hmm. and sometimes literally.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that this was their ultimate destination was that it was thought to be inescapable. I don't know that anyone ever claimed that the building itself was inescapable, but the whole situation was inescapable, because even if someone made it out of the prison, they wouldn't make it off.
Yeah, the water actually has these weird currents where it draws in and out and in and out. And so they're like, no one's going to be able to swim it. They will die. So it's almost it had its own walls and barrier, so to speak.
If you don't know too much about currents, if you didn't take your oceanography classes, what we're talking about are, think about like rivers under the top layer of water.
Right.
So the top layer of water might even look, you know, relatively placid.
Yeah, it's now currents are those things that are always full of the singing surfer turtles in movies, if you've seen them. That was a Finding Nemo joke. Remember the currents under the water had the surfer turtles?
I've never seen Finding Nemo.
Well, good for you. I'm sure it's a ticking time bomb. You have a child. But
I was about to say that. I mean, it's coming. So in other words, it might look fine. But like when you another way to think of it is when you're at the beach and they say, you know, don't go out too far. There's a strong undertow. It'll pull you under. Kind of like that.
Yeah. And if you don't pay attention to Baywatch and you go out there, the Hobie Cat might get caught on the jetty because of the currents and you're going to have to call in for help. Sorry, keep going.
But we digress. Yeah. So the point being, with it being surrounded by water, it being surrounded by treacherous water, that, I mean, even if someone did escape, and if they were stupid enough to jump in that water, they were going nowhere but to the mm-hmm. bottom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It also, you know, we mentioned it was somewhat notorious. It also didn't help that some of the most notorious criminals of the day spent some time in Alcatraz. Right. People like Al Capone, who we know here in Chicago, mm-hmm. Machine Gun Kelly, which was Brent's nickname in high school.
Right.
Machine Gun
Hand.
That's
my rap name.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, well, mm-hmm. true. You did have a lot of nicknames. James Whitey Bulger, John Stamos, and Robert Stroud, who you might not know that name of, but when he was at Alcatraz long enough, he became known as the Birdman of Alcatraz. They all did time there.
Yeah.
And Brent, I went down a little rabbit hole reading about, I always thought of the Birdman of Alcatraz as like this, I guess what I was probably actually thinking about was the guy in Shawshank that had
had the
pet.
Bird. What was his name? He killed
I don't
himself,
remember.
But yeah.
And it turns out the Birdman of Alcatraz was like a murderous asshole. I didn't know that.
Right.
I didn't know that. Not a good man. Not a good man. Actually ran down a flight of stairs, had a shiv or a screwdriver or something, and stabbed a guard or an inmate like 17 times in their neck.
Brooks. It just dawned on me as you're saying that. Brooks.
Oh, Brooks. Yeah. Brooks was here.
So was,
Brooks
so
was here.
Was Red. Yeah. 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 Ugh, we were going to get some mail if I hadn't came up with that.
And then there was the mustached guy who had a mouse In the Green Mile.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, we have been raised to believe that these people who have animals or who are named after animals in prison are kindly souls, and I'm here to tell you that is not the case.
Right, right, right. Anyway. But it's not just because of that, though, John. It had a bad reputation with, well, of course, inmates that had stayed there, but also a lot of elected officials, even like the U.S. Attorney General, they started attacking it back all the way in 1939. 2 years later, Robert Kennedy submitted plans for replacement to a little-known place called Marion, Illinois, which we actually went to college right outside of there in the Marion Federal Penitentiary.
Yeah, speaking of Carbondale, right now, if you look at a map, the town due east of Carbondale is Marion.
The Marion Federal Penitentiary that was there was, at that time, a Supermax, like a level 6. It is no longer... It's still there, but it's not the Supermax anymore. They've moved things around. But yeah, yeah. And I don't think it's telling any tales out of school, even if you haven't been there. The anger was justified because living conditions on Alcatraz were awful.
Yeah.
They had smaller cells than most prisons. You had no privacy. You couldn't get a job. Work was considered a luxury, you know, so most of the time you're not doing anything. And prisoners were routinely thrown in the hole, which I have been in, for months at a time. It's just a windowless black room. And if you go there, they'll actually shut you in there. It is spooky. It is really weird to just go into this room and ka-chunk and you're in there.
I was going to ask for clarification. I'm glad to know that you meant the actual prison cell on Alcatraz.
Not like I was just in the hole for a while when I was doing my stint.
Exactly.
Brent was a bad boy. Yeah. Oh, and ironically, though, I will say this, Alcatraz had a reputation for serving good food. Yeah. So some people actually volunteered to go there. Then they got there and they're like, fuck me, I made a mistake. But the eggs are good.
It's like the folks that took the original discounts they were offering on cruise lines when the pandemic started.
Right.
I mean, you know, the whole disease thing's happening. But can you, I mean, you're talking about a balcony room for $900?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I need to lose weight. What's a little diarrhea?
Okay. We're going to be stuck in Japan for how long? I'm hearing 2 months.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well,
I might need to reevaluate.
We'll see.
When we say officials were angered by it, that anger was justified literally from a dollars and cents perspective. Mm-hmm. A 1959 report indicated that the facility was over 3 times more expensive to run than the average American prison. Most American prisons cost around $3, or at the time, would cost about $3 per day per prisoner. Alcatraz was close to $10 per day per prisoner. It's a big difference, you know, 3 times as much.
Well, San Francisco's an expensive town. You're paying for the view.
You're paying for the view.
So, John, it sucks. It's expensive, and people get murdered. It sounds like someone, and I'm not pointing names, but maybe 3 or 4 people might want to escape that. I don't know. So, what do you say we dive in?
Yeah,
to the escape next on Hysteria 51.
The food was good. I especially liked brown gruel day. So much better than yellow gruel day.
Wasn't there. He just wasn't there.
I don't know. I mean, I can at least pretend he was in prison.
That's true.
Hola, David. Me llamo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it, so... It's very high on pronunciation, too, so you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation, yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know. If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and we have both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works. You know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times. And it's always now, right now. Get now. Started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit RosettaStone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, your 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today.
What is actually in gruel? I always thought gruel might be, I don't know, is it like,
it's when you're out of lips and assholes.
I always thought it was grain based. I always imagine like cornmeal.
That's what I think of. Yeah, so that would have been yellow gruel day. I'm pretty sure brown gruel, we're not even going to get into it.
But C-Bot liked it.
Yeah.
Well, when it starts to prolapse.
Stop. No.
Okay. All right. Enough. back to timeout. Brent, before we talk about how they did it, let's talk about who they were, the escapees.
Yeah, so we said, well, three, we'll tell you about them. The most prolific.
We'll tell you about all four.
Yeah, well, yeah. The first one, though, the one everyone kind of knows, John, tell us, you know, we're going to talk about him first. Frank Morris, and everyone kind of knows him because Clint Eastwood played him in the movie. And he was kind of the brains of the operation. So he's the one that people kind of go to when you think of the escapees first.
And when we say brains of the operation, I mean that in a couple of ways. First, just that it was his idea and he had a lot of the, he came up with a lot of the ideas as to the how and the why and the where and the who and all that. But also brains in the sense that he was one of the smartest inmates at Alcatraz. His IQ tested out at 133, which is an above average IQ.
That's just shy of what is 140 is genius.
140
right?
is considered entry level genius.
So that is very
not
going to
mention where mine fell.
76.
No, we're not talking about yours, buddy. But 133, it is reported, put him in the top 2%. Of folks spending some time, doing some time at Alcatraz.
Well, and he was so smart that he was convicted at age 13 for his first crime, and he built a huge rap sheet over the next 20 years of his life. The brains.
He also wasn't a stranger to trying to escape prison.
Right.
He had been at the Louisiana State Pen for a while, and he hoofed it out of there on a 10-year sentence for bank robbery. He wound up at Alcatraz because a year later they recaptured him because he was, you guessed it, committing burglary.
I'm so smart. God, I'm smart. Oh,
I mean, if you literally make it out of prison, you escape from prison. You made it. You've been out a year. Don't do the things that put you there. And I don't even mean that ethically. I mean that like pragmatically. Right.
Well, we should also state real quick, though, before he served time in Louisiana, he spent some time at Atlanta Penitentiary. And that's going to come into play because the other two escapees that actually made it out were the Anglin brothers, John and Clarence. And not too much of a different upbringing from him. Clarence was first got breaking into service stations when he was just 14 years old. And, of course, the brothers together began robbing banks and other places, the establishments, as a team in the early 50s, and they tried to go in when they were closed to ensure that no one was there because they actually didn't want to hurt anyone, and they claimed they only used a weapon once during a bank heist, and it was actually a toy gun that they had. So That actually is the one, though, that got them arrested. And as the consolation prize, they did 15 to 20, and they got to see a bunch of the penitentiary. So, you know, they got a tour of the land, but they did go to a few.
No rewards for being good guys. I mean, they literally only did it with a toy gun. And right. Look at it. It sends them away.
Yeah, and by the way, they went to Florida State Prison, Leavenworth Federal, and then Atlanta. And then they repeated, after several failed attempts to escape the Atlanta facility, they were transferred to Alcatraz.
That's right. That's right. And to be clear, we keep saying Atlanta Penitentiary. That was the name of it.
Right.
We're not saying that generically, like there was a jail somewhere in Atlanta. In Atlanta. That was the name of it. Atlanta Penitentiary.
Yeah. And like Marion is Marion Federal Penitentiary. That's just the name of it. It doesn't have some, it's not Leavenworth or, you know, I'm in blah, 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 The Rock.
San Quentin.
Yeah, Alcatraz. So that brings us to the final member of the team, Alan West.
Well, he starred in a well-known television series in the 50s called Batman. Nope. I'm hearing that's incorrect. All right, that was a bad joke.
Yeah, well,
I'm going to apologize to everybody listening.
He was a mayor out in Rhode Island for a while, too, but that's just beside the point.
That's the difference between you and me, Brent. When I come up with a bad joke, I wind up apologizing for it. You dive in deeper.
That's right.
I respect your game.
Dive into the bay. Get yourself a quahog.
So, spoiler alert on Alan West. This is the guy we mentioned that did not get out.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll, more on why and how and all of that later. He was a low-level car thief, but he also tried to escape prison when he was in the Florida State Prison.
Yep.
That's what landed him in Alcatraz. So he wasn't like a murderous asshole or anything like that, but because he had tried to escape another prison, they shipped him to Alcatraz.
Yeah. But don't forget, he'd also spent time with some of those boys at the Atlanta Penitentiary. And you know what they say, you don't do time together, you don't do crime together. So they're thick as thieves, man. Oh, you like that?
Who said, was that like Rocksteady and Bebop that said that?
Yes, they did.
Okay, good. All right, so we told you the players, let's tell you the game, the escape itself. If you were paying attention, as we not so subtly referenced it, during our the previous Crime Stoppers segment there, you might have noticed that all four of these guys spent time at the Atlanta Penitentiary.
Yeah.
And it's thought that their escape from Alcatraz plan worked so well and stayed so quiet because they already had established like mutual trust from knowing each other in Hotlanta.
Lame.
Okay. I mean, the plan, it kicked into gear when they all came together, not just at Alcatraz, but when they were assigned adjacent cells in December of 1961.
Make brothers right next to one another in prison. You know, just do that.
And it's not like you would.
Honor among thieves and bots. And thieving bots.
The basic plan, Brent, was simple. It was a simple plan, but took a lot to execute. Mm-hmm. Morris noticed that the stone, especially around the vent in his room, the stone that like the wall was built of was, I guess, flaky.
Mm-hmm.
I read in some places that the supposition is that was due to the sea air being, the salinity of the sea air kind of. But regardless of the reason, he found that it could be chiseled. Mm-hmm. And so he improvised a tool and started widening the vent behind his sink.
He made friends with a guy named Red in the yard. Red could get things, so he requested a rock hammer.
Just stop. No.
Seriously. of course, he shared the plan with the three other guys, and they all went to town widening the vent. And to do so, they used a mix of old saw blades found around the prison.
Great to have laying around in a prison.
You literally took the words out of my mouth.
Oh, no shit.
That's the way it's described. I think what really happened was they were taking old saw blades that were going to be discarded from the shop.
Shanks are us.
I have a hard time imagining you're just walking around the yard and you're like, oh, yeah, daffodil, dandelion, old saw blade. I just don't think that's the way it worked. But either way, they were able to procure old saw blades, along with metal spoons that they stole from the cafeteria, and an electric drill they actually made with an old vacuum cleaner.
That's pretty fucking handy right there.
And they used all of that to do the chiseling. But they had to make sure that no one would notice said chiseling, so they actually fashioned cardboard and painted it to look like the stone that they were chiseling away. Mm-hmm. Then they took the vent and kind of glued it to that cardboard and painted it to be the same color as the stone. And basically, whenever they weren't working on it, they put that kind of fake fascia stone slash vent back in place mm-hmm. so no one would notice. And no, C-Bot, they did not use posters of Rita Hayworth.
Right. But it was going to take a lot more than, you know, just a way out of their cells to get out of that whole Alcatraz prison and off of that rock. It was going to take a lot more materials. And don't forget, there's literally no privacy in these cells. And the cells were tossed fairly routinely. Tossed means they search them looking for contraband of any kind.
I prefer syrup.
So once the holes were wide enough to actually get through, the guys would climb through on a nightly basis, and they went on like these rummaging runs looking for stuff through the utility corridor. And it's kind of cool if you go there. So the cells back up to this little corridor that is just, there's pipes in it. That's all it was just a hollow in the wall that they'd left in case anyone ever had to go in there. And right now, if you go in, they have it opened up and there's plexiglass and you can look down there. But they were just in this cool little area where they could climb all the way to the top of the cell block because there was pipes in there and no one would really know that they were in there. Secret room almost, you know, but it was the size of the whole cell block.
This is the part that gets me about this story. That, like, there was just all this square footage that no one was paying attention mm-hmm. to. One of my favorite parts of this story is this little unguarded area. They like set up a clandestine workshop, right? Like mm-hmm. literally a workshop to put together all the stuff they needed for this escape. And so they were able to collect, this is shocking to me, over 50 raincoats, lots of other stolen and donated. When I say donated by other inmates, mm-hmm. materials. And using all of this stuff, they constructed life preservers. And those were constructed based on a design they literally found in a magazine. Popular Mechanics had a design for life preservers.
If you're ever needing to get out of prison.
If you're ever needing to get off an island that just happens to be in a bay in San Francisco. Yeah.
All you can find is 50 raincoats. Well, follow us for more recipes.
They also were able to fashion a 6x14 rubber raft out of the same raincoats.
They literally used these said steam pipes and would like fuse the seams together so that it was watertight. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, they stitched it and then they did. I saw a number of documentaries where they tried to kind of recreate this stuff and they would find that just gluing it or just steaming it or like none of it worked. And they had to do all of these things, which begs the question, like, how many versions they created before they found one that they thought was seaworthy.
Mm-hmm.
But they even made paddles, Brent, from scrap wood and stolen screws from the shop.
Right.
I mean, they this was well thought out.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't an overnight thing. They took months to work this out until they were ready to do it.
Yeah, they really did. And finally, when it was about time, there was a ventilation shaft they could that went up to the roof that they could climb, and they found a fan in their way. So when it was time to go, they were going to get past that fan by removing the rivets holding it in place. And oh, by the way, did we mention they even had a homemade wrench?
Right.
I actually saw a picture of the homemade wrench. It's pretty brilliant.
They have all that stuff on display there, and it's crazy.
Oh, at Alcatraz?
Yeah, it's crazy the stuff that they used or had. And they would work with like the hour during the day that they'd play music for everyone, and everyone would like be loud and sing along because they knew they were doing shit in there to like cover the noises.
That's so true. And Frank Morris had even requested, I guess you could request musical instruments to play during music time, and he had requested basically an accordion. It's called, what is the name of it? It's like a smaller accordion. I forget what they're called. Mm-hmm. But think of an accordion, only smaller. And I know 50 of you are yelling at your radio right now. He would use that to cover up the sound and play it to cover up the sound. Later, when they needed to inflate the raft, they used mm-hmm. the same instrument to inflate the raft. It's great.
Yep. Yep. So they started this in December of 61 and they escaped June 11th of 62. So like I said, they had 6 months And that is a long time for no one to notice you're gone. They were also on top of that, too, because they would throw clothes in their bed and they made heads out of, you know, makeshift paper mache. And they went and scooped up hair and they used paint and made fake heads so it looked like they were in their beds at night.
Yeah, yeah. So it's prison paper mache. They'd use whatever they could get their hands on, right, to make paper mache.
I love prison wine.
I don't doubt that you do. In fact, actually, Brent, have you seen those videos for prison burritos?
No.
All right. So here's the deal. I don't know enough about prison to know why you have access to certain foodstuffs and not access to other foodstuffs. But apparently, things like hot Cheetos and other types of you know, Funyuns and other types of chips are pretty easy to get from, I guess, the commissary.
Yeah.
Along with ramen noodles are also pretty easy to get. Mm-hmm. And apparently tortillas are too. So a prison burrito, basically imagine...
My mind is going in the wrong spot when you say prison burrito.
Like, take a big bag of... okay, yeah, gross. Take a big bag of hot Cheetos.
Okay.
Crunch it all up. Then crunch up a bag of another of your favorite flavored chips. Pour that in. Take ramen noodles. Pour steaming water or boiling water into the bag of ramen noodles to let them soften. Or pour that whole bag, or pour the hot water into the actual bigger bag that has everything in it, along with the seasoning from the ramen noodles. And depending on which video you watch, they have other. Similar ingredients like beef jerky and things that they've been able to procure. Put it all together, let it sit for 5 minutes and kind of soak up the water so it's not like dripping. Then throw it inside of a tortilla and you've got a prison burrito.
I have seen you and I make not far off of that in college. Like, what's in the fridge? Velveeta cheese, half a packet of ramen, but two flavor packets for some reason.
Some
dehydrated onions. Funyuns. Oh man. Okay. Break it all out.
I can work with that.
And one chicken breast. We're gonna eat this.
Well, it'll make enough for everybody. Let's go. Yeah. So anyway,
so that's our next cafeteria 51.
That's our next. Yeah, we should
do a prison burrito. I'm down.
We should. All right.
I always have regular Doritos here. I could probably use those.
Yeah. I've been looking for an excuse to go out and buy weirdly flavored chips. Let's do it. All right, so we mentioned the prison paper mache that they actually did fashion. Yeah. It was made from a mixture, I found it here, of soap, toothpaste, concrete dust, and toilet paper.
Wow, it's been and of as you said, 51.
They. are we talking about paper mache? Or are we talking about sea body?
Right.
I'm just not sure. They painted the heads that you were talking about with paint from the maintenance shop, and as you mentioned, they glued that hair on that they had gotten from the barber shop. Then they piled those towels and the clothing.
Boom!
Into
it's
the
like
bunk.
You did as a kid to make it look like you're in bed or something. Yeah,
like you hadn't snuck out. Well, very similarly, like they wanted people to think they hadn't snuck out.
Yep. And then we get to the night among nights, June 11th, 1962. They've done all this prep for 6 months. It's time for their escape. It's time to do it. And
that's right.
They jump into the service corridor that we talked about, and Morris and the Anglins climb to the shaft of the roof, and it is actually reported the guards heard something, they thought, and they're just like, nah, I think it was on the roof. They broke out of the shaft that goes to the roof, and they're like, I'm not going to worry about it.
You said shaft.
Yes, I did.
Shut up, C-Bot. I think in prison guard school, they tell you, one really loud noise that's unexpected, ignore.
It's called someone else's problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's exactly right.
But then, so they're hauling the boat, the life preservers, the paddles, you know, all this shit up.
They got a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
With them.
They slide 50 feet down a kitchen vent pipe, and then they got to get all that shit over 2 12-foot barbed wire fences. It's amazing they didn't even fucking puncture the raft on those. Then once they're on the grounds, they're looking around. They find a blind spot they'd already pointed or figured out that the guard towers, their searchlights didn't really hit it very much. And it was on the northeast shoreline. So they get there. He starts playing the tune of his people. Ree, 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 and they inflate everything.
With the non-accordion.
Right. And then sometime after 10 p.m., no one is exactly sure, they hopped on the raft and they were never heard from again. Now you're saying, au contraire, that was three of them. What happened to Alan West, the fourth one? Well, the cement used, the you know, that was holding up the crumbling concrete around the vent, it had rehardened and it kind of fell
down.
It
was really good contact cement.
Yeah. And he couldn't get to the hole. So he's like, fuck it. And he went back to bed. But he finally did get his grill removed. He went up. He saw they were already gone and he'd missed his boat, and so to speak. So he literally just went back to bed. I'm like, oh, well.
I mean, isn't that amazing? After all of that prep work and everything that had gone into that,
yeah,
it takes you a little longer than you expect. And you're like, well, I'm literally staring at freedom. I'm on top of the penitentiary. I'm going to go back in and go to bed.
And this is, or because of him, this is why we know so much about it. Because when they got out, he was like, well, they're out. What's it fucking matter? And he told the whole story, and they were able to corroborate it by going into the wall and finding all this stuff out. He let them know how they had made their escape.
The silver lining there of him being a snitch is that's how we know the story we're telling you today. Like, right. That's how we know exactly how it happened. Oh, by the way, Brent, concertina
wire.
The accordion like instrument was a concertina.
Is it concertina wire? Is that what I'm thinking of? Or
I looked it up. It looks like a smaller accordion. It doesn't have like a keyboard.
Concertina
to play.
Wire is like barbed wire, but with razors. That's interesting.
No. I'm talking about the instrument that that Clint Eastwood would play to get all the snakes off the island. Oh wait, no, that's the wrong story. Sorry.
So our heroes are out in the grand abyss that is water. What happened? Did they make it to dry land? They wind up at the bottom of Davy Jones' locker. They get scooped up by aliens. The mystery behind the escape of Alcatraz and what happened to them is all 100% solved next on Hysteria 51. Or your money back. Promise.
Maybe I should get a concertina to play while we eat prison burritos.
That's probably smart.
Are you singing Law & Order's theme song?
I am. Dun dun. Speaking of Law & Order, what happened? Where are they? Where are John?
Where are they? First, let's talk about what we know as fact.
Okay, now that that's done.
End of show. Yeah. The escape wasn't discovered until the next morning, giving the escapees ample time to get away. Well, that's assuming that everything else worked out the way it was supposed to. There was an extensive search once they were found to be gone. Over the next 10 days, I mean, federal officials, they brought in some help from the military, and they did find lots of stuff from the escapees.
I'll
give you a quick list of the stuff they found. A paddle floating about 200 yards offshore of Angel Island. Incidentally, they also found another paddle on top of the actual building, the prison building. So they, they obviously never made it to the water. They dropped along the way. In roughly the same place in the water on the same day, a wallet wrapped in plastic, complete with names, addresses, and photos of the Anglin's friends and relatives was found. Then also shreds of raincoat material believed to be the remnants of the raft were found. And that was found on a beach not far from Golden Gate Bridge. And a deflated life jacket made from the same material was found 50 yards off of Alcatraz Island. So lots of debris.
Yeah.
But that is the extent of the physical evidence that was found, you know, in the water and surrounding areas.
Yeah. Yeah. And the warden was like, well, and he talked to the FBI and they're like, they drowned trying to escape. No one can get out of here at the end. And you got to think that's something.
And of course the warden's going to say that, right?
That's what they want to do. Exactly. Like, done and over with. We found who shot the president. We found the men drowned. You know, you just want to get all these done and over with. The U.S. Marshals were like, we're going to leave this one open. And another thing that people have talked about, too, is even maybe those photos of the Anglin's friends and relatives, that might have been something they dropped knowing it might be caught. because they weren't going there, so it might actually throw scent off. It could have been something that Morris came up with, they thought.
There's so much like, was this done on purpose? Was this on accident? I mean, it's also not crazy to think the flip side that they actually did drown. San Francisco Bay
is a really...
It's not
crazy to think that at all. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a really perilous body of water. We were talking about it earlier. It basically, think about it this way. A bunch of seawater shoots in, again, in a channel under the surface and then shoots back out to the ocean. Like it's like the rapids under the regular water.
Yeah, yeah.
And it could easily take a man under, or it could also easily grab a raft and just shoot it out to sea. And if you're in a raft and you're shot out to sea, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, yeah. It tends to be that way. But let's say that they didn't drown or get, you know, in the bay or get swept out to sea. Where were they going? What do you think?
The most conventional theory, the one that has kind of stood the test of time, is they were heading for Angel Island.
Yeah.
That was technically the closest land mass, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another one is, and this is mostly rooted in the study of the currents around there, is that the men might have been targeting Horseshoe Bay and maybe even throwing their paddles, et cetera, into the current so that they would be discovered to throw the authorities off, like we said. And then Mythbusters even got in the game and posited the fellas targeted the Marin Headlands because doing it themselves, they found that that was one of the easier ways to do it. So those are things they say. Let's say they did make it, John. That's the important thing. Like, they did. Where would they be, or where are they, or what do you think happened?
Well, okay, so no matter how they made it, let's with the supposition that they did,
which we have no reason to believe that they didn't or did. There's never been a body or anything like that. So saying that they died is just as, is guessing, period.
Right.
Just like saying they didn't, period.
That's right. That's right. There was one report of a body seen by a boat that didn't report it for like till days later.
Yeah.
But there's also that body was seen near the Golden Gate Bridge, and 5 days before that, there had been a jumper off the Golden Gate Bridge. So it's
a lot floater.
Right. So a couple disparate pieces of information. Yeah. There's a guy named Thomas Kent. He's a former inmate.
Yeah.
According to him, the three had more help than previously believed from inside Alcatraz, and had someone waiting for them on shore to take them to Mexico. Some even said it was a girlfriend of Clarence Anglin.
Yeah, and the whole Mexico or south of the border thing is something that we're going to run into a lot.
The problem with Ken's story, like a reason a lot of folks didn't believe him, I think he was the one that this story was told to a reporter, and Kent was paid $2,000 for the story.
Yeah, he had said he never wanted to talk, and then they said, we'll pay you, and he goes, okay, I'll tell you the story. But the guards, they did talk to a couple of the guards, and they're like, well, he's pretty straightforward, older guards and stuff. So it's a 50-50, but, he could be telling the truth. Then you got John Leroy Kelly, who somehow wasn't a serial killer, but that just sounds like every serial killer's name out there. So this guy dictated in a deathbed confession to his nurse. So take this as one of those. But he claimed that him and his partner picked up three men in a boat and transported them to the Seattle, Washington area. Like, that's where they went to. And later, under the guise of transporting, blah, 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 they went to Canada with him. It's the long story. And then he says Kelly and his partner murdered the escapees to get the $40,000 that their families had sent them. So he murdered them and had a lifelong guilt, and just got it off his chest as he's dying to his nurse.
So they made it, but one of their instruments of escape actually came back to haunt them and killed them.
So, that one seems, I guess.
Another, and this is something, Brent, I'm just going to briefly mention this. This could be its own episode. I think if you're interested in this story, you should go and kind of research this on your own, because I could have spent a lot more time here. The family of the Anglin brothers have Christmas card after Christmas card and letter after letter.
The mother received Mother's Day flowers every year for Mother's Day.
And they say that these letters are from the Anglin brothers, and they're all, post-escape, obviously. Mm-hmm. Basically like, hey, they were alive and well, and they're mailing us. Here's the proof.
Right. Nothing other than that. And there has been some stuff that came forward and said, I am here, I'm here, I'm here. This one could actually, I feel, and maybe we will do that as an update, the Anglin letters on their own. That could be a fun part two for me.
Yeah. There's a Patreon lot of...
someday.
did it come from here? Did it come from there? Is that their handwriting?
For the rest of their lives up till now, they'd be in like 84, 85 years old. They have still gotten things to make you think that. But speaking of, this does not discourage or despair that. The next place is Brazil. So the reason we're talking about Brazil is they had a nephew, the Anglins, named Ken Widener. And he told Daily Mail Online that he is certain his uncles made it to South America and established families there. They married, they had children, everything. He says the family always felt, or he said, we always felt our Uncle Robert knew they survived. Then on his deathbed, it's kind of a recurring theme here, he admitted to being in touch with them for the first 25 years after they escaped. And he, you know, they were down there. They had new lives. This is an interesting one. He even has photos of them from the 70s, like 1976 is one of them. They're standing in front of two men standing by what could be Brazil, I guess, and they're kind of on the side of the road, and there's a big mound of dirt. It could be them. It could also be...
The way you just said that reminded me of Wayne's World. Brazil! We're welcome. We're in Brazil.
Hi, I'm in Brazil.
Take me down.
Welcome to Brazil. No, but for real, though, like, it could be.
They're standing in front of that statue of Jesus.
Right, right. Here I am in Rio, beautiful Brazil. But, you know, all joking aside, though, it's just one of those things where they are kind of maybe, you know. And the other one that has been more of a tip-off to the Marshals was Florida. There was a lot of credible sightings of people who said they thought they might have seen them, and they gave details that maybe the public didn't know, like they were left or right-handed and what color their eyes were and what they sounded like and little details that made the authorities think that they could have possibly been in Florida. And even if they would have escaped to South America, that might have been somewhere where they went, especially if they wanted to see family and things like that. And all these were kind of in the Florida or Georgia area every time that they were noticed in those areas.
Maybe near the Florida-Georgia line?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that the Anglin brothers became bath salt snorting zombies.
Yeah, the Florida man. It's just their families. Hey,
yes,
real
yes.
quick, if you get the chance, you're in San Francisco area, go. It is a fun thing. When you land on the island...
It is not cheap,
by the way. No, and it is over a mile just to walk uphill to get to the prison. So bring your walking shoes. And it's fun, though. It's a lot of fun, and it is a beautiful... beautiful island, and you get the best view of San Francisco you're ever going to see. Like I said, Lisa and I did it, and it's a lot of fun. So go do it, and you get to see all the you know, they have books and all the leftover stuff is on display, and not cabinets, but on display and shelves and stuff. It's really cool. This one, I'm not going to lie to you. I know they were criminals, John, but I hope they got away. I hope they did.
It doesn't hurt to know that none of them were violent criminals,
yeah.
or at least that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Like, it's easier to root for them knowing that they were just, you know, hey, stick them up,
yeah.
you know.
I got syphilis. No, that's Al Capone.
I thought you were just telling us something.
See, that's how I talk, because my syphilis is eating my brain.
Alan, I do feel bad for Alan West. Like, you... literally the ultimate womp womp. Like,
I should have eaten that second burrito.
All right, so Brent, despite what we want, let's wrap it up here. What do you think happened?
The U.S. Marshals really thought that they probably made it. I think they, without saying that, they did. I think that they probably did make it. The FBI and the warden just let, you know, they want to tell the you know, the layman that they didn't. There's enough with the, which we should come back to, but the papers, the letters, the family members, the anecdotal, you know, evidence, things like that, to think that they definitely, at least some of them, made it.
We are in agreement. So not only are we in agreement, ding, 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 ding. My kid broke my bell. not only are we in agreement, I'm on the side of the conspiracy. I think they 100% made it, and I As to where they went, I don't even know that I care that. Like, I didn't do enough research to really care.
And Brazil doesn't let them extradite here unless they allow it, you know? So that's one of the things.
I
mean, that makes,
like, I'm fine with, Brazil sounds as good as anywhere else, right, you know? Right. But I think they went on to live long, healthy lives.
They could still, they'd be in their 80s, but a lot of their family members have lived in their 90s. It's very conceivable they could still be alive today.
They could still be alive today, yeah. Yeah, I think they made it. I think, and I just think they were smart enough to stay off the grid, finally.
What do you guys think, though? How do you think, or what are your thoughts? How can they tell us, John?
Go to Hysteria Nation. It is our Facebook discussion group where we talk about all of this and a whole lot more, including prison burritos. just go to Facebook.com and search Hysteria Nation.
Also, Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That's our Facebook page. Patreon, Patreon.com/Hysteria51. You can get shirts, host your own episode, Not Smell John, that's no longer available. Do all sorts of things, up all nights and radio dramas. Voicemail 773-669-7277. Hopefully the next time we play them, they'll be a little bit better than the screaming and nonsense that Seabot played last time he played them. But hey, you get what you ask for. You get what you pay for, I guess, right?
Well, I mean, again, letting Conspiracy Bot do anything that involves this podcast, the result is going to be, it's on us. Right? It is.
Also, if you forget any of this, there's one destination, Hysteria 51. .com. I guess I should say too, gofopedia.com also.
That's right. They'll both get you there.
So yeah, if you're planning on escaping prison, maybe skip dessert that night, you know, and just make sure you can wiggle through your little space. That's all I'm saying.
And don't use extra contact cement.
There you go. So with that said, I've been Brent.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand join.